Please be seated. Not long ago, I was having a conversation with a deeply thoughtful young man. The young man was struggling under the weight of the evils of the world. He was learning about the Holocaust in school, and he was aware of the death toll of war, and he had learned to question the reality and power of God. How can one believe in God in the face of such evil? This young man is not alone in his question. Raised in the Deep South as a high schooler with a burgeoning race consciousness, I began to critique the racist attitudes and systems of my social context. I was keenly aware of the silence of my church and other churches on the sin of racism. Indeed, the integrated South of the 1980s was still struggling with racial reconciliation, and 10 a.m. on Sunday was the most segregated hour in my hometown, as in many towns in America. As I experienced the church's silence, I began to question the power and presence of God in the face of evils such as racial injustice. This struggle to make sense of God's power and presence in the face of evil is so common that there's an entire field of theological study devoted to this question alone. Theodicy, as it is called, is the attempt to answer the question of why a good God permits the manifestation of evil. Jesus takes seriously the reality of evil in our world. In today's reading, as crowds gather around Jesus and his disciples, the religious authorities accuse him of being possessed by a demon. Confronted with this accusation, Jesus doesn't discount the reality of evil. Instead, he responds to the religious leader's accusation with a rhetorical reply. He asks how Satan can cast out Satan. In other words, if he is indeed possessed by Satan, how and why would he cast himself out of other people? Most likely, Jesus believed in a personality named Satan, which makes it all too easy for our postmodern minds to ignore this part of today's reading entirely. Most of us don't believe in a personified devil with a pitchfork and horns and a tail. But Satan doesn't necessarily refer to such a characterized image, but rather acknowledges a real evil power that is actively engaged against the compassionate and reconciling love of God. This is the reality that Jesus names. And in doing so, Jesus validates all of the ways that we perceive evil in our human history, our world, even in ourselves. Slavery, the colonization of foreign lands for wealth, the Holocaust, the martyrdom of Christians, racism, our own lust for money, to name a few. I'm sure many others are forming in your minds as we speak. The list of evils in our world is seemingly endless, and our powerlessness over them is so seemingly real. Confronted by such evil, some will profess that there is no God. Indeed, when that Holocaust survivor, speaking at the school, was asked by a student how he continued to believe in God, he responded that having experienced such evil, he was confident that there was no God. That is some people's final answer. But Jesus' confrontation of such evil draws us beyond our human powerlessness to the reality of a God who is always present and at work, healing and transforming what ails us and our world. Indeed, by the time we arrive at today's confrontation between Jesus and the religious authorities, Jesus has already broken social and religious barriers to eat with notorious sinners, to heal the sick. All of this to reunite to God's saving embrace those cut off from community due to their perceived sin. This is the redeeming work Jesus does throughout his ministry. And it is the reality proclaimed through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. The reality that declares that the power of God is always and forever more powerful than the powers of death and the death-dealing ways of so much of our world. Interesting. After Jesus stumps the scribes with his question of how and why he, if Satan, would cast out Satan, he turns their criticism upon them. Once Jesus has illustrated that his reconciling ministry is far from sinful, he tells the religious authorities what is indeed sinful. The unforgivable sin, he says, is to deny God's power to heal and transform all of the death-dealing ways of our world. In other words, to deny the power and presence of God in the face of evil. We may say we do not believe in Satan, but we do take seriously the powers of evil that continue to pervade our world and even seek our allegiance. We say we believe in God, but do we take seriously the power of God whose love is stronger than the illusions and deceptions of evil? I think of the certainty of that Holocaust survivor's testimony that there is no God. And I think of that young man searching for his own truth about God. Can we, the church, you and I, testify as boldly to a God whose goodness is stronger than evil? I'd like to invite us to try to do that just now. It's a little risky. I'm going to ask you to talk. But I'd like you to take a moment to consider where you have seen God's power and presence at work in the world in the face of evil. Through what people or movements or moments in history, in your own life or in the realm of human history, have you witnessed God's power and presence at work in the face of evil? Take a moment to think about that, and then you're invited, as you are moved to do so, to give voice to that person or that moment in human history or that movement that's come to mind. For me, as a student of the civil rights movement, people like John Lewis and Martin Luther King, looking back further in our history, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, these were people, for me, whose faith called them to be witness to a God whose power was working to transform social ills that were death-dealing to people in our country.
My mother, who showed me
Thank you. I invite you in the week to come to allow these names and these moments, these movements in time and history to visit you, to testify to that power and presence of God in the face of evil. And I thank you for your witness today. I pray that we can continue to bear witness to the power and goodness of God, even in the face of evil. It's not by human power alone that the ills and atrocities of so much of this world will cease. Indeed, the power of God, declared through the victory of Christ's life, cross, and resurrection, is still and forever at work through people and movements and moments such as those invoked here today. We can, really we must, continue their witness to the victory of Christ over all evil. My former professor and distinguished theologian Don Saliers teaches us that following Christ requires that we learn with Christ to weep with those who weep and to rejoice with those who rejoice. It asks us to live into the densities, to live into the densities of human joy and suffering. It calls us to find ourselves precisely in our willingness to give up our self-absorption. This is a demanding task, requiring a willingness to follow Christ into a new solidarity with God's whole family. But by doing so, we can continue to witness to the never-ending presence and power of God's victory over the power of evil. Thanks be to God. Amen.